Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors. Welcome in. Mark Coxon here along with Bo Matthews and Carl Middleman. And Bo, do you know who got outdoors earlier this week?
We had a surprise appearance. You went outdoors?
No, Mick Jagger.
Oh, you know what?
From
I did
Stones.
See that. You know, I predicted this because, and I don't know if it happened or not because I wasn't at the show, but at Enterprise Center on Thursday night, Blake Shelton, Trace Adkins, Martina McBride were all here, and they're on a big, you know, nationwide tour, and I thought, I wonder if those worlds would collide, especially with Blake on The Voice, mm-hmm. all his connections. I don't know. I didn't even hear anything. If Mick Jagger showed up, because if he was in town, he might have.
Mick was on Thursday. He went to the Arch because the video got posted up on a friend's Facebook page.
How great is that?
And he was all by himself except for his six bodyguards.
Well, I bet he didn't get robbed.
Yeah, he went down and he took a picture in front of one leg of the arch, going like this, and it's, which is bad radio because you can't see me.
Yeah, you can,
my arms
but you
up.
Can picture it.
Yeah, so he was,
or you can go to Mark's
stylish.
Facebook page and you can see it.
Yeah, well, he wouldn't let us share it. Oddly enough, there was not a share button on his Facebook page.
971talk.com has it.
Oh, they have the picture.
They do.
Okay, not the video. That's what I was talking about.
Oh yeah,
so the picture the Stone shared. I thought it was pretty cool. He was out walking around the arch grounds. Somebody must not have told him that blues players get robbed at gunpoint down there.
Well, maybe that's
why he had all the security. Right?
I will say this. I made a bad joke, and knowing that he was in town the day that I made this bad joke, I do apologize because I'm a Rolling Stones fan. I'm an Aerosmith fan. When I met Steven Tyler, he's just the teeniest little waif of a guy, but when he's on stage, he is gigantic.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so on St. Louis Talks, I did mention, well, if you see a little old white woman that is, you know, around St. Louis with frizzy hair, maybe Mick Jagger.
Oh.
That should clean everything up.
But he looks great, though. He's 78
yeah.
years old, but he was very spry, walking up the street to his car to get back in, and his bodyguards were running interference to make sure nobody actually spoke to Sir Jagger.
I saw them at the Dome. What year was it?
99.
I saw them then.
Yeah.
And it was impressive, and somebody asked me, hey, you know, I want you to go to the show with us. I'm like, dude, last time I was at the Dome, the tickets were not fantastic. And Mick Jagger was about a quarter inch tall from my view. I'm like, I'll watch the videos.
You know what Mick's known for, the lips, right?
Mm-hmm.
The last
I could
time,
see those. I couldn't.
Last time I saw the Rolling Stones, I was so far away from the stage. How far away was I?
How far away were you?
That Mick's lips on the Jumbotron did not match up with the with the music, right?
They're out
right.
of sync.
That's how far away I was. His lips were out of sync with the music. So.
But to be an entertainer like that, to be able to come out on stage with your band, most of the band, and to be able to perform like that is just so impressive.
And
to hold church.
Mm-hmm.
You're doing it.
You know, on a Sunday.
Since we're all name dropping here, I had an opportunity back in the mid-2000s to interview Grace Slick.
Whoa.
From Jefferson Starship. She's an artist now. She was in town with some art she had painted, and she
was at a gallery.
Agreed to do an interview, and we brought her in for to interview for a weekend show I taped.
Right.
I recorded it on like Friday morning or something. And she's in there in the studio, and she was complete. I asked her why she quit singing, and she was completely critical of these old bands that keep trying to get it done on stage. She just doesn't understand it. She got to know when to say when. I can't believe they're still out there, she said.
No.
She's got those beautiful blue eyes, just
shock white hair now, but I mean, she was great, but she did not agree with all these bands that are still out there trying to get it done. And I'm like, hey, if they, as long as they still sound good and their real fans are going to be willing to cut them a little bit of slack.
You know you're big if you've got tribute bands and you're still touring. There's tribute bands doing your gig.
Right.
Prices are a lot cheaper, I'm thinking. But you know what? Anytime I've seen a legendary performer, I love outdoor concerts. They bring it. ZZ Top, when they opened for Kid Rock several years ago. I mean, I'm looking at these guys going, wow, they just tear it up. And it's in them. You'll be a talk show host till you're into your 80s, and people will be like, why are you doing that? Yeah.
That's great. Well, listen, if you got tickets to the Stones, good for you. I would love to have the chance to see him again. That would be fantastic. Carl's going to see him.
I'll be there.
Well, he's got pull. He knows people.
This will be my fourth time seeing them.
Wow.
I saw them at Busch Stadium in 89. I've seen them at the Dome. This will be my third time seeing them at the Dome.
All right.
So, real quick, are they always excellent?
Yes.
Do they always bring, because like Hank Jr. show, when Hank takes his shirt off, it's going to be a horrible show. When he leaves his shirt on, it's going to be a good show. My review. There you go.
There you go.
Yeah, you got to know. You got to know these things about your favorite artists. All right. Hey, coming up, do you like taking a drive to see the fall colors? We've got one of the hands-down experts. In fact, it's his job to drive around and report back to you. We'll talk to Mark Gruber. Coming up on the Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time, baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in baseball isn't boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.
There is unrest in the forest. There is trouble with the trees.
I love that song. Describes our political situation so well. How did Rush do that all those years ago? Fantastic.
And they're Canadian.
I know, right?
Well, hey, they got their own issues north of the border, I'm telling you.
Welcome back to Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors. In here with Bo Matthews and Carl Middleman. I'm Mark Cox.
This segment is brought to you by Razorback Armory. Boy, I'll tell you what, if you collect all kinds of websites that you got to go to, you mean to go to, go to RazorbackArmory.com. They've done such a nice job revamping. You can shop online, but there's nothing like going into the store. It's in De Pere, half mile east of 270 on Manchester Road. Stop in to see them at Razorback Armory and online at RazorbackArmory.com.
Yeah, it's good stuff. So my wife and I love to travel. In fact, we probably talked about this before on the show here, Bo, but we just bought a camper, right?
Yes.
And it's a pull trailer. It's not huge. My wife wanted something she was comfortable trailering. See, here's what I'm kind of hoping for. I'm kind of hoping that I'm getting her comfortable at the 17-foot level, and then we can upgrade one of these days.
To
right?
The tour bus.
Well, maybe something bigger in here. Maybe even a fifth wheel. I don't know. But I'm hoping to upgrade that. And what we're planning to do in a couple of weeks near the in the middle of October, during my daughter's break, is we're going to hook up the trailer and we're going to go north up into Door County and check out the leaves, among other things. But I'm sure that north of here, you're already starting to see some of that foliage change.
Is it 79 that runs parallel to 61? It's closer to the Mississippi River. But, man, that to me is like the best road in the state of Missouri for seeing colors, for riding motorcycles. It's like a roller coaster. It's just up and down, and it's pretty straight. But I don't know where Door County is exactly, but that's a great plan. I mean, right now we've experienced such great fall weather, but I know it's going to heat up a couple more times before.
Yeah. Well, Door County's up in Wisconsin, so it's going to be a little bit.
I thought you were talking about...
Oh, no. It's probably an eight-hour drive.
I'm a Minnesota boy, so I know that. I know going north a whole lot. In Iowa, there's like seven trees in the whole state of Iowa, so there's not much to see there.
Well, unless you like corn.
Assuming that you want to stay a little closer to home, we've invited Mark Gruber to join us, community forester, of course, with the Missouri Department of Conservation. Great to get him on here. Mark, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you guys?
We're doing fine. So is that something that you do as a certified arborist? I mean, is it also a passion of yours to go out and see some of these great fall colors and track when the best times are and all that?
Well, actually, so I'm lucky enough to have to submit a weekly report that gets posted on the Department of Conservation's website. So we do updates throughout the fall season. So it's a labor of love, and gee, I hate driving around during really nice fall weather having to look at fall
colors.
It's
the worst.
You know? It's a terrible job, but somebody's got to do it, right?
And so, you know, they always try to pick like the prime week. And I've only seen about seven's my number today, seven leaves on my patio. We're not quite there, but it's coming quick, isn't it?
Yeah, so what tends to happen with fall color is, you know, everything looks green, 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 and then all of a sudden, bam, over the span of 2 to 3 days, sometimes you can get some really quick changes, especially in those early fall color species. And, you know, everybody, you mentioned that people want to know when the peak is, you know, peak of color, and sometimes we do get, like, one single time period where you've got a whole bunch of different types of trees overlapping, but more often we'll tend to have what I call pulses of color. You'll get the early fall color species will go, then they'll kind of dwindle off, and then you'll get the late fall color species will start to kick it up.
Well, yeah, I wondered about that. What is the trigger? I mean, is it the first frost, or is it before that you start to see those sharp color changes?
Yeah, so it's actually day length. It has to do with the shortened, you know, photo period or time that we have sunlight during the day, shortening every day. And so what happens is, you know, the leaves being the energy makers for the tree, they reach a point where it costs more energy to make, you know, energy from sunlight. So with that shortened amount of sunlight, it's just, you know, it doesn't make any sense from an efficiency point of view from the tree. So the tree cuts off the flow of water and nutrients to the leaves, and the leaves start to color up. So that green pigment, the chlorophyll, breaks down in the leaf, and it either reveals some colors that are hidden, or in the cases of your, like, reds and purples, when you see those colors, those are actually sugars, which is the energy that the tree creates trapped in that leaf. When the tree cuts off the flow to the leaf, that energy gets trapped in there, and it's revealed in those reds and purple colors.
Wow.
Yeah, it's brilliant. You know, I live down Highway 21, and that's also kind of like a roller coaster. But you get some far-off views, and you can see the horizon to the south as I'm headed home. It's beautiful. As a community forester, Mark, about how many miles do you put on in a month's time driving?
Well, I cover a pretty wide area from the city of St. Louis all the way down to Crawford, Washington County, so Cuban, Potosi area. So, you know, some weeks I'm in the office quite a bit, and some weeks, I, like you mentioned, I'm driving around all over the place. So hundreds of miles is not too much of an exaggeration.
Horrible job. Well, hey, exactly. You know, since you are a certified arborist, if you wouldn't mind me asking, for those of us that have a little bit of ground, what are some of the things that are adverse to trees right now? Is there any kind of special new, you know, bug that's out there that's killing trees? Because I'm seeing a couple on my property that I thought would live for 1,000 more years, and they're you know, losing limbs real bad. And any thoughts on information for that?
Sure. Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know that they'd necessarily be quote unquote new, but probably the biggest one would be emerald ash borer. So if you have an ash tree of any kind and you haven't done any treatment on it, emerald ash borer is an insect that got basically brought over from China back around the late 1990s, early 2000s. And it's all throughout Missouri right now. It's especially intense in areas. Here's an example. If you drive out Highway 44 right now, there's all kinds of dead trees on the sides of the highway.
Yeah.
Those are all ash trees, and they're all killed by emerald ash borer. So it's pretty dramatic, and we're just going to continue to lose them Hopefully there'll be an individual or two that has a, you know, resistance, just like with any, you know, biological organisms, there's always something that's resistant, but they're going to be few and far between. So if you have an ash tree and you really want to keep it, you need to think about treating to keep it around.
Would you have information on whether you can burn that as firewood or should you discard of it completely?
So yeah, I do. So basically right now, the only quarantine is that you cannot take ash firewood or wood products of any kind and ship them outside of the state.
Okay.
So just the best practice is to dispose of it as close as you possibly can to where the tree was growing. I mean, like I said, emerald ash borer is throughout the state right now. So, you know, whether you'd really be infecting another part of the state, that's probably not going to be the case. But it's, again, it's just the best practice to burn it if you can.
Even as firewood, even as firewood in the house?
Even as far, okay. That would be fine.
Good to know. So we're talking to Mark Grubers, a community forester with the Missouri Department of Conservation. He's a certified arborist. He drives all over the place looking for great places for you to see fall colors. I'm guessing, based on what you've said so far, Mark, the key would be that the kinds of trees in a particular area. So within our scope here of the greater St. Louis area, are you able to see different kinds of colors depending on which direction you go?
Yeah, I don't know that I would put it that way. You know, you're Missouri and even, you know, southwestern Illinois is dominated by oak forests for the most part, right? I mean, you'll get into obviously seeing a whole bunch of other trees when you get into more urbanized areas because there's different types of trees planted and things like that. But you're still going to get to see a wide variety of color no matter where you go. Oftentimes I would say it's more a function of the type of topography that you're in. So if you get down into low-lying areas, bottomlands, you know, next to the river and things like that, those trees don't tend to have the most spectacular fall color, and if there is, it just tends to be kind of a yellow.
Mm-hmm.
But as you move out of those bottomlands, then you'll tend to get a greater diversity of tree species and shrub species, and so you'll tend to get a greater diversity of color.
Are you like a meteorologist? I mean, you can predict, because Mark said he's going to Wisconsin here. Do you look at what's going on with trees all over the country?
Not all over the country, but I'm laughing because my father actually was a meteorologist. So I have a little bit of interest in that as well. But I always laugh because everybody gave my father a hard time when he got the weather forecast wrong. And quite honestly, fall color forecasting is about the same. We don't have that perfect crystal ball. So
hold on. Are you calling out all meteorologists right now?
Absolutely not.
Can you check the fat on the back of the hog to find out if it's going to be a bad winter or not?
No, I would never do that.
That's funny because, you know, my theory, Mark, for many years I worked over at Channel 4 News with all the meteorologists over there, and my theory on meteorologists is that they're like baseball players, right? If they're batting 300, they're all-stars.
Yes. I mean, quite honestly, that's the case. And it's, I mean, you know, if you want the science behind it, it's trying to get a mathematical formula to predict nature, and that's just not going to work, you know, every time.
Maybe our government should hear this conversation. I said it out loud,
Mark.
We're going
to get Mark in trouble here. That's good.
I'm going to plead the fifth on that one.
So, Mark, where are the spots online that we can go with the Department of Conservation to keep up with your thorough tracking duties?
So it's mdc.mo.gov, and you'll see a little, you know, a scrolling set of pictures at the top of your screen, and one of those will be fall color reports. And you just click on that, and we have them broken down by our various regions. So you can see what it's like where you live, or if you're planning to travel in the state, you can check out that part of the state. And there's a forester in each one of those areas that does the reporting to let you know how things are going in that location.
That's great. Thank you. You guys do a great job at the Conservation Department. Always been a fan ever since I realized you were out there. Have you been there with them a long time?
21 years.
Good for you. That's a good government job.
Absolutely. Hey, Mark Gruber, thank you so much for your time. We appreciate you.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
Yep. We'll talk again soon. A community forester gets to drive all over the place and look at beauty. Isn't that awesome?
Love
That's
it.
A great job.
Or you could be an Uber driver and have a boring view.
Exactly,
that would be terrible.
An interesting guess.
Okay. All right. Second Amendment Radio on the Great Outdoors continues. Coming up next, Tim Kaczelsvec. You know Tim, don't you?
I do not know Tim.
Oh, wait till you get a little. Oh, yeah.
He's the thinking outdoorsman.
Okay. All right. Good. Looking forward
Deep
to it.
Deep thinker. That's next.
I tell you why I can't find you. Every time I go out to your place, you gone fishing.
Ah, you know.
Well, there's a sign upon your door.
Uh-huh.
Gone fishing.
Nice.
I'm real gone, man.
You ain't working anymore.
Second Amendment Radio on the Great Outdoors. You never know what Carl Middleman's going to come up with, but getting into this segment, our last segment of the show, it's brought to you by Chuck's Boots, and here's the news on winning the side-by-side from Thoroughgood Boots and Chuck's Boots. You only have a few more days to get registered. The 30th, they're going to shut it down, and in the middle of October, they're going to do a Facebook Live to give away the Polaris General 1000 from Thoroughgood and Chuck's Boots. Simply to win it, go to their website, chucksboots.com. You can give them your name, phone number, email address, all that good information, no purchase necessary, or go to their Facebook page. Good luck in the drawing for the Polaris side-by-side from Thoroughgood and Chuck's Boots.
Yeah, well, the serious hunters among us have already been in the woods for a while now, the ones that hunt with a bow.
Yes, you have.
Not Bo Matthews, but hunt with a bow.
B-O-W.
If you're good enough to hunt with a bow, you've been in the woods. I am not one of those skilled hunters. I will need a firearm. So I'll be waiting for firearm season before I go out there. But in the meantime, you know, the thing that's always mystified me, I'll be honest with you, it's always mystified me, is that some mornings I get up and I'm driving to work and there are deer everywhere.
Yep.
And some mornings I get up and I drive to work and there's none to be seen. And I know it's got something to do with atmospheric conditions that drive that, I believe. My guess is that our guest today will have the answers that I've been seeking.
I'm gonna bet you $100 on that one.
Tim Kaczelsvec is with us, the Thinking Woodsman, editor-in-chief at DeerCast, and co-host of the 100% Wild podcast at Drury Outdoors. And Tim, good to meet you, my friend. How are you?
Yeah, you too, Mark. It's great to talk to you guys, and I'm doing really good. It's archery season in Missouri, and October 1st, it'll be archery season in Illinois. So it's just hard to have a bad day when it's this time of year.
It does baffle me. You have a camper, Mark. It baffles me that people will drive 4, 5, 6 hours to go deer hunting. And as you mentioned, you come across them all the time on your way to work.
Well, but you got it. The people that are serious about it, maybe Tim will back me up on this, you got to drive to where you know the big deer are if you're fortunate enough to have hunting rights there. Right, Tim?
Yeah, and a lot of people have leases, especially northern Missouri is a big place to, you know, is a great place to have a lease. A lot of guys that live around the St. Louis area happen to have leases up in northern Missouri or even in Iowa, and so they're traveling north. You know, typically the farther north you go, the bigger the bucks get.
Yeah.
And so they want to go. But there's a lot of great suburban bow hunting. I mean, I make my bread and butter off of suburban bow hunting around St. Louis, and there are some real sleepers out there that are walking through people's backyards.
So I do want you to explain what DeerCast is for those that may not know about it. If you do, you already know it's awesome. But my question is if you can explain that, and I have a follow-up question on how it can help other people, but explain what DeerCast does for folks.
So Mark and Terry Drury have been deer hunting for a combined over 70 years and have been doing it professionally. I mean, it's part of their job, part of how they built Drury Outdoors, the brand. And they have made a lot of observations over the years as to what barometric pressure does and the moon phase and the relativity to the point in the season when peak estrus is for does. Cloud cover, departure from the average temperature, like all these things have an interplay with each other. And they used to sit down and spend hours looking at the upcoming weather forecasts and looking at where they were in the deer season and figuring out what the best times to hunt were. Well, over the years, they figured out, like, they kind of figured out this equation, and then they approached a developer and were like, can we turn this into an algorithm and make it available to everybody? And as you guys know, Mark and Terry Drury have been killing big deer for years, and so they've got the credibility to do this, and so we put together DeerCast, and it's an app that literally kind of brings in local weather data for you for whatever locations you choose, and it tells you down to the hour what the predicted deer movement will be like. Now, it's not like, it's not radar. It's not tracking individual deer. If you have a coyote come through or you have trespassers come through, it's not going to know that. So, you know, we're not asking anyone to turn their brain off as a hunter. It just augments the skills and the woodsmanship and the experience that a hunter has to make sure that they're, one, making the most use of their time, because time is so valuable. And I've got a young family. I can't be wasting time out there in a stand on bad days. And if you're out there and the conditions aren't right, you could be educating your deer as to, you know, you're coming in, maybe you're sweating it out because it's a hot day or something. You could be doing more harm than good. So DeerCast really helps you maximize your time, and it also helps you to do no harm on your hunting areas, because that's a real factor.
Okay, so it's not like the Waze driving app where you pinpoint where the speed traps are. You're not identifying the deer. I thought it did. I thought Mark could go, okay, there's 10 deer on the road that I drive in. It's not that, I guess.
No, and there wouldn't be much fun. And I mean, it would kind of take the mystery and the magic out of the hunting experience. Like I said, like, we don't want anyone to turn their brains off, because that's your best tool in your hunting arsenal is your brain. So, you know, we don't want to take away from that magic. And I don't think like anyone could ever create an app that would do all that.
Hey, but you never know.
maybe someday. But in addition to like the deer movement predictor, we've got all of our videos in there from the past 30 plus years of being in business. We have the DeerCast Track app, which allows you to pull up a 2D model of a deer. And after you've taken your shot, you can kind of move a reticle on there and say, okay, this is where I think I hit the deer, and it'll peel away the hide. It'll show you the organs and the skeletal structure, and then it'll populate a bunch of videos that are geolocated by where you place that reticle, a fully produced video hunts telling you, like, here's where you hit, here's what that projectile did, here's whether or not that shot was likely lethal or not, and here's what to do in terms of your recovery plan. Because just shooting the deer is only half the story. You had to then recover your deer, and that can, you can make a lot of mistakes, and you can bump your deer, you could lose it. And so we help you put together a customized recovery plan for your deer based on your shot with the DeerCast Track tool. There's just nothing else like it out there, and that's included in DeerCast.
He encapsulated my normal hunting experience in one line. He doesn't have time to waste sitting in a tree stand freezing his butt off for hours at a time on a day when the hunting is going to be no good. I can't tell you how many times I've done that, right? Never seen a thing except the squirrels that can make themselves sound like they weigh 100 pounds.
Boone and Crockett squirrel, yeah. that's
right. So is this a subscription-based app for your phone? And do you spend a lot of time with your head down on your screen as opposed to looking around nature?
Yeah, there's a free version. There's a $9.99 a year version and a $19.99 a year version. And the $19.99 a year version gives you DeerCast Track, 10 days of the DeerCast forecast, all the videos, like, it's there. There's and then you can post things in there. There's a social media feed. I've got a team of writers that write at least an article a day, oftentimes two during season, on you know, how to be a better hunter, news articles, stuff, you know, stuff that's coming up in the hunting world to kind of keep people engaged and informed. There's a lot going on in DeerCast, and you can get it on your laptop or your desktop, so you can pull it up at work too and figure out when you want to leave work a few hours or get a stand.
No kidding. Tim Chelsvik is our guest right now, the Thinking Woodsman, editor-in-chief at DeerCast. And so my experience has been in the area where we hunt, which right now is out near Warrenton, not far from there, is that at the bottom of the hill, you lose cell coverage. Like, it can't pick up the local cell tower. So is the app self-contained if it for conditions and all of that stuff. What do you do if you're if you don't have cell coverage? Does it impact it?
Yeah, I mean, it is driven because it's pulling in videos and it's pulling in up to date. You know, it's going out and sampling weather data.
Okay.
Every time you pull it up. So, you know, if you're going to go into a low cell service area or a no cell service area, definitely check your DeerCast. You can take a screenshot of it or even a screen record if you want to go forward in time and see what it's looking like. And you'll get the data as of that moment when you had cell signal.
Yeah, it's amazing. You talk about all the data the Drury brothers had leading up to it, you know, decades and decades. It reminds me of Phil Robertson, the duck guy. He's got books and books and books of weather and, you know, what the wind was like and all this stuff to check flight patterns. So they had all this data on paper. I can just imagine the stacks of the logs or the ledgers, and that's what they put together to create this algorithm.
Well, is that and trail camera data and personal experience? And I mean, these guys are hunting a lot of days every season, trying to put together TV shows. Back in the day, it was VHS and DVDs.
Right.
Trying to get hunts for those features, and so it was very important that they were out there and making the most of their time. And they spent their time sitting and not seeing anything. And like anyone, they wanted to learn and grow and not keep beating their heads against the wall. So from the very beginning, since 1989, the whole goal of Drury Outdoors has been to help hunters become better at their craft. And so DeerCast is just another way of doing that. We don't want to think for anyone. We don't want anyone to turn their brains off. We just want to augment the knowledge and skills that they have to make the most of their time. And like my daughter killed her first whitetail last year out in Wildwood.
I remember
with a crossbow.
That. Yeah.
It was awesome. But before we went hunting, I spent a lot of time with her. I gave her my phone. I pulled up DeerCast track and I was like, tell me, where do you want to shoot this deer at? And she would move the reticle and then she would flip off the exterior so she could see like, okay, there's where the heart is. There was where the lung is, lungs are. And she knew when that doe walked in front of her where she needed to put that crossbow bolt because she knew the anatomy of a deer and she saw what happened. Like she watched the DeerCast track videos so she could tell like, okay, too far back and you're into the stomach and guts and it's not a good recovery process at that point. So she put a great hit on her deer. It went 70 yards and piled up and it was all high fives and hugs after that. So, you know, it's a really great tool, especially for people who are new to the sport or people just need a refresher. Like when you look at where the heart is on a deer, a lot of people are surprised at how low it is.
Yeah.
A lot of people are also surprised at how far forward the stomach goes. It actually goes up into the rib cage a little bit. It's just a great educational tool.
And your daughter is how old did you say?
She was 8 last year when she took her doe.
Good for her.
Here's my man card. Here, I'm just going to hand it over.
There's about 1,000 more of them out there in Wildwood. I'd like her to take out for me, please.
Well, she's on a mission this year. She wants a buck desperately. So we've got a couple little spots in Wildwood. And I'm hoping that we can get in and make something happen.
Well,
I think
that's fantastic. So, Tim, back to the app for a minute. I have in the past, ignorant of DeerCast, downloaded other apps that include topographical maps, and you can save your locations for your tree stand or wherever it is you're hunting mm-hmm. from. You guys do that as well on DeerCast?
We don't. We actually use the Onyx Hunt app.
Okay, I've got that.
We love
too.
That. They're great partners of ours and so we don't do that, but it's a really great tool.
Are you only an archery hunter, or are you firearms as well?
I'm like 90% bow hunting. Last year, the folks at Mossy Oak invited me out to Oklahoma to a media camp, and I killed my first deer ever with a rifle.
Wow,
isn't that cool?
So that was like people are like, really? You work in the hunting industry. You've never killed. And I just really love to bow hunt. And so I've taken one mature buck with a rifle, and that's the only deer I've ever killed with a rifle. And it was fun. It was great. But I just love the process and getting up close and personal. When you kill a deer with a bow, you're putting the energy into that arrow. You know, when you make that draw, that's your energy that's touching that deer, driving that arrow through them. And it's just a very, very personal and intimate experience. And so I tend to lean more towards the archery side.
And it's quiet.
Very quiet.
Stealthy.
Yeah. Especially when I go, because I usually don't see anything.
Don't say that.
I got to give you credit, Tim. I love you. I love that you have cleaned up the term gutting the deer to call it recovering.
Oh, right? Yeah.
That's nice.
The whole cleaning process, that's another thing. We've got some videos in DeerCast on how to process a deer, because it can be kind of messy, and especially early season, it can be stinky and flies around and everything. And that's where it's great to, like, if you can go with someone, or if you're someone who hunts, you know someone who wants to hunt, take them with you, because there's such a big learning curve. Hunting is an intimidating thing to do. And if you can lower that obstacle, lower those barriers for people, like, well, heck, I just shot my deer. What do I do next? That's so powerful for new folks to the sport.
So good just point. Like the finesse of using the word recovery, you know, kind of cleans it up.
That's right.
I've heard him also say the word dispatch, which is really kind of cool. I'm going to dispatch this one. very cool. Okay, so this is just me. I've seen too many TV shows, reality shows. Have you ever had to, because my biggest fear of going deer hunting deep into the woods is not having my side-by-side with me, not having a cart. Have you ever had to backpack out a deer on your back?
I normally drag them out. And I've killed, like, one of the places I hunt is out by Hidden Valley ski area.
Yeah.
And it's very, very hilly, very hilly out there.
Yeah.
I was a mile in.
Ooh.
And I killed a doe on opening day. I think it was like 2015 or 2016. It was hot. I couldn't count. I mean, there were literally thousands of flies swarming this doe as I'm dragging her out. But the thing, like, you see, like, these really cool pictures of guys with the deer hefted over their shoulders and they're walking out and they look really tough. But those deer are covered in ticks and mites and lice, and, like, especially early season, I don't want that thing up by my head. Yeah. Plus, it stinks. So
I didn't know if you knew the technique, though. You've seen what I'm talking about, though, right?
They'll put, like, the front hooves into, like, the Achilles tendon and make a backpack out of it almost.
Yeah. Mark does that all the time.
Absolutely.
Came into work that way this morning.
Yeah, right. He could.
Why's
on the
your
road?
Back all bloody, Mark? Kill the doe.
Yeah, I've rarely killed anything that's too big for me to carry out. That's the problem. I need to up my game. That's right.
Definitely better table fare when they're smaller.
The behemoth squirrel, Mark's alter ego.
I hate those squirrels.
Your enemy, yeah.
So I think it keeps me awake. I'm like, did you hear that?
It's crazy how many times you can be alerted and on guard. And it's a gray squirrel or it's a possum. Whatever. And then the minute that you don't react and don't get ready because you think it's a squirrel, it's a deer.
Yep. A massive one. I have noticed, by the way, I do spend a lot of time in the outdoors, although I'm not a hunter per se, but man, the squirrels have been working so hard this early. I'm like, man, are we in for it or what? Cold winter.
Sounds like it. Yeah, I've heard the Farmer's Almanac saying we're supposed to have a pretty tough winter.
Better check with Dave Murray. I don't think he agrees with that, does he?
I think you said cold.
Check some persimmons.
Cold, yeah, that's true. That's
winter,
point.
Cold. What are we talking about? That's crazy talk.
Yeah, three months from basically Christmas right now. So unbelievable.
Yeah.
Well, listen,
so,
Tim.
Mark, do you have plans to deer hunt this year?
I do have plans to deer hunt this year out in Warren County, probably.
There you go. There you go. Do you run cameras or anything, or do you know what you got walking around?
We do. I'm fortunate enough to have a relative who owns some land out there, and he does run the cameras, and we've seen some bucks, and he knows the people that own the land next door, and there's deer there. You just have to know when they're not bedded down all day, which I'll know now because I'll have the DeerCast app.
Mm-hmm. Well, and when you kill your buck, post it up in DeerCast, post a picture and let me know, and I'll publish it to the main feed and everyone can see it.
Nice. Ooh. If it's big enough, I will. How about that?
Yeah, heck yeah.
He doesn't want to be shamed.
That's a relative term. You know, and that is something we should talk about at some point, just the relativity of what people consider, you know, a really good buck. And there's, you know, a lot of people being crappy online about, well, you know, that's not a great buck, or I wouldn't have shot that deer. And it's a really intensely personal decision on whether or not you're going to shoot a deer, because what people consider a trophy and what people consider something they want to shoot is all based on their personal preference.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got a long ways to go as a community of hunters, just being friggin' nice to each other online.
Thank you. Thank
not
you.
Being so crappy to everybody. Gosh.
Keyboard warriors are everywhere. Tim, I asked the question of a buddy of mine, I think it was last week or 2 weeks ago we had Jason on. He had claimed he hadn't bought protein in a long time, and I'll tell you the number. Do you buy meat at the store, or are you like a Puritan where you only want...
Yeah, red meat, we eat venison solely. Every now and again, I'll buy some ribeyes or something. But if we're eating red meat around our house, 99% of the time, it's gonna be venison. And I killed a gobbler this past year with my bow, so we had some turkey to live off of. And we'll buy chicken and some turkey every now and again. But pretty much, if we're eating red meat, it's venison.
And how long have you had that kind of a rule in your house?
It's weird because it just kind of evolved. Like neither my wife or I set out to have this philosophy of like we're gonna be 1800s homesteaders. No, we just like I was killing 4, 5, 6 deer a year, and I was like, we got it, let's use it, and that's just kind of what we've fallen into.
Okay, well, Jason, 13 years, he said, never bought any
time.
Bird or anything. So,
man.
I don't know. I just have a lot of respect for you guys that deer hunt, that, do what you do. If you don't know about DeerCast, download it from the App Store or wherever you buy your, you get your apps. And Tim, thank you so much for joining us, man. It was a good time.
Yeah, great visiting with you guys. Take care.
Fantastic. Yep, Tim, thank you. We appreciate that. Good stuff.
Tim Chelsvik, the Thinking Woodsman, editor-in-chief of DeerCast and co-host of the 100% Wild, because he is, podcast at Drury Outdoors.
Hopefully that's got you in the mood to get outside, do a little bit of hunting this year. Thanks for listening this morning, Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors. For Bo Matthews and Carl Middleman, I'm Mark Cox. We'll see you next time.
Oh, yeah.
Get more at 971talk.com.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.